This is Movers and Shakers, where we interview the upcoming generation of Make It Happen multifamily investors to share their story.
Welcome to the Movers and Shakers podcast. My name is Gino Barbaro, co-founder of Jake and Gino, multifamily investor, educator, father, mentor, and I am joined today by my co-host, my brosif, Mr. Joshua Ryan Rusin, the community director of Jake and Gino. Mr. Josh, how are we doing today, bro?
Doing well, Gino. Excited about, we got a local Knoxville guest on today and really making it happen, and even more excited about the Jake and Gino community event we have going on this weekend. Gino, how about yourself?
I'm doing good. Josh, talk about the weekend. What's going on this weekend?
This weekend, we have our Manage Right Bootcamp. So we're going to have our students come out to Knoxville, Tennessee to be immersed in multifamily for a weekend to really spend the weekend getting that hands-on experience that's really hard to get from a book, to see the systems they're learning in action. I mean, Gino, do you have anything else to add to that?
Well, remember the proprietary framework? I got my three fingers up here. It's the buy right, manage right, and finance right. This weekend is all about manage right. It's all about looking at the systems that we implement to manage these deals. And it's all on the buy right also, how you get into these deals by buying them right. So it's going to be a great weekend. It's all about networking. It's all about, you know, I was talking with our guest off the air. It's all about having fun in real estate. And part of having fun is networking and creating those relationships and those connections. So we always forget about that. We think about just the grind part. Let's enjoy it. Let's make real estate part of our lifestyle and let's have fun and make money at the same time.
Couldn't agree anymore. It's going to be an action-packed weekend. Actually, a little bit of our guest. So we have Harper Jones on today. So a little bit about Harper. He is a recent graduate of the University of Tennessee, Knoxville with a major in finance. He's been in real estate for the past 3 years, starting in wholesaling and flipping and now venturing into the multifamily space. To date, Harper has flipped 50 plus properties since fall of 2016. Harper decided to go the route of multifamily for the long-term wealth and tax benefits it offers. His company, Aerodor, currently has 75 units under its belt. Harper, man, welcome to the show today. How are you?
Yeah, doing well. Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
So Harper, you're 22 years old, man. Let's take it back to 19, you know, it's 2016. Why real estate? How did you get started? How did you find real estate? Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, sure. So back there, fall 2016, you know, prior to that, I was trying to look around at, you know, where the wealthy people had, you know, started building their wealth. And so I looked, you know, insurance, real estate, all those realms ended up landing on real estate. So, you know, started the short-term route. Flipping and wholesaling to get some capital. And honestly, I was a little nervous at first to venture into the rentals. I didn't want to have the calls in the middle of the night and, you know, things like that. But really, I think that was a short-term mindset, but it took me a year or two to try to understand that, you know, the real wealth's not built flipping and get one check. It's getting those monthly checks from, you know, multifamily, you know, so real estate.
Harper, why did you go to college?
Well, I thought that it would benefit me, much more than it actually did. And two, my family, that's just kind of like, you know, how it was. I was a culture and a family to go to college. I followed. And then, you know, 2 years in, I started to have a little bit of success or whatever. And then maybe 3 years in, I was so far in, I just decided to finish, you know, what I had started, even though, you know, I'm taking calls in between classes or emailing and working on deals, you know, sitting there. I didn't really even know what was going on in class. So I just wanted to finish, get the paper.
What would you have done differently? If knowing now what you know now, would you have gone to school or would you have taken a different route?
What I probably would have done is met with more mentors, paid for some education to try to see if that was the right fit for me. Because I'm not saying college as a whole is a mistake to do. But I think the route that I'd went, yes, it could benefit me. And yes, I could network doing that. But I think my time would be better well spent. Out in the real estate space and out networking and going to events like the Money Mixer down in Jacksonville and hanging out, you know, at G-Dad's house. You know, it was a lot of fun, but just like that one weekend, I would almost say I learned more than a whole semester of college because you're asking the people who are doing the real deals and, you know, really building something for themselves and into their families. And that's what I want to do.
So let's talk about that weekend real quick. What did you get from that weekend? What did you learn that you really can't learn in college? And what is really powerful from doing that in real estate, networking with people like that?
Yeah, I would say the one thing is you have some people that are, you know, actively doing deals and And I've built something over time, so they're very vetted. And when we're down there, like walking that one property or the two complexes, you know, we're pointing out specific things that were going on there, where like in a classroom, you just cannot be taught, you know, just different things about a unit. Oh, here's how we change these little minute details in the unit, and here's how we generate more rent. And then, you know, here's how we end up managing that every month and implement all these little things. It's just hard to be able to get the real world experience, I guess, so to say, in a classroom. You kind of got to be out there and do it. You know, you learn the best, not from reading, but from doing and watching other people and then doing it yourself.
I am a proponent of college. My oldest daughter is going to college. I just think somebody who's flipped 50 homes while he's going to college, people don't flip 50 homes in their entire lives. So I can imagine if you weren't going to school, you probably would have flipped 75 or 100 homes. It would have accelerated that. And the other thing is that I found very interesting was you love whole life. Let's just jump into whole life 30 seconds, because I know that's like your passion right now. And it really dives into the real estate space also.
Yeah, sure. So whole life dividend paying policies, insurance. So I had come upon this a handful of months ago. I've done quite a bit of education, reading maybe 5-6 books, you know, hopping on some calls with different insurance agents who understand the niche of infinite banking, so to say, is what it's called. So, you know, once we clear some positions here, I'm probably going to start up a pretty big policy, maybe put 75 to 100K in premiums every year. Now, someone may say, well, that's stupid. Why would you put money in whole life? But I'm looking at it as a vehicle to accelerate the returns and flow the money through whole life, not look at it as an investment, but to flow it through there and then to the you know, real estate there to accelerate their returns. And, you know, I'm happy to talk further on that at a later point, but I think that'd be a, you know, another podcast in and of itself.
That is a total podcast in and of itself. And the reason why I mentioned that is I had met you in March down at the Money Mixer in here in Jacksonville. We were speaking about it. And I was like, most people in their 40s and 50s don't understand the concept of how powerful it is. So I was really impressed about you know, the whole infinite banking concept that you had a real great grasp of it. You want to, Josh, you want to just jump into his first deal? Let's talk about his first deal, how he got into it.
Yeah, Harper, so let's talk about it. You did a 35 unit recently. I would love to learn how you found the deal, how you finance it, some of the challenges, you know, what the opportunity was with the deal. Let's hear it all.
Okay, and there's a few complexes we took down, some smaller ones, and then the 35 is the one that we had syndicated and rounded up some money. But there is the 6 unit, which was our second acquisition back in late May. I'd like to talk on it, if that's all right.
That'd be great.
Yeah, let's rewind back to then.
Okay, so that was a 6 unit. That's when we were still doing a lot of direct mail, and we are now, but we happened to send some direct mail, and the owner had a 6 unit. So we ended up negotiating, getting terms with that. The numbers on that 6 unit we had bought for $285K last May with the $10,000 seller credit. So we put about $90,000 down in equity for closing costs, reserve account, and down payment. Now, we got in there. There was a good value add with raising rents, and we went in there, rehabbed 2 units real nice, probably spent a little bit more money than we should, and the time I was a little bit longer. All to say, I guess it was about, you know, 8 months later, we refinanced in January, and we refinanced and it appraised at $415,000. So we pulled out a $93,000 check. So we pulled out $90,000 of all the money we put in, plus another 3. Now, we did have to reimburse for a few of the rehab and some other stuff, but the bottom line, we returned about 80% of not only my capital, but the partner's capital within that deal. So we had one investor also come in passively.
How did you find the deal?
Yeah, that was just direct mail. We had sent the letter, the guy had called in, and then we kind of built a relationship from that and went out and sold the property, and probably took maybe another 15 to 30 days to come to terms.
And what were the big learning lessons on doing that first deal at that 6 unit?
Yeah, I would say some of the bigger learning lessons is really verifying, you know, all the numbers, like how long they've been there, security deposits, you know, current work orders, you know, who's paying utilities, all those things like that. You know, we got an inspection and did all that stuff, but really, I would say there's a lot of things at the beginning. I guess at the acquisition, we learned a ton, but we also had some mentorship by our side. I had some local mentors that, you know, we're calling every day, hey, what should we do? How do we handle this? Because that was only our second acquisition. So, you know, we're still learning a lot of little details on, you know, how to handle it and how to onboard the management, things like that.
So speak to that mentorship. What would have happened if you didn't have that mentorship? Would you have been able to close the deal? Would you have made much bigger mistakes?
Well, I can tell you, we definitely wouldn't have returned that $90,000 in 8 months. You know, And I'm a big proponent of, you know, mentorship and paying for it and building those relationships, because you can learn from their mistakes and you can implement that yourself. So like during our rehabs, yeah, we've done some rehabs and yeah, we've done some flips and wholesaling, but you know, some people had to just take me inside and be like, you don't have to make the unit so nice that you'd live there, you know, depending on what the class is. Like, you don't need to put 8,000 in, you can put 3,000 in and get a rent up of $150, whereas you get 200 if you spend $8,000. So that's just a waste of, you know, our investors' money and time, you know, putting it in there. So there's just little things like that that add up on, you know, how to handle it and what to spend. And mentors had, you know, taught us things like that to, increase the bottom line. And then we get in there, we can kind of have a plan in place. So I'd actually have mentors go walk over there and, you know, walk us through how they would rehab it, since, you know, they got, you know, rentals themselves, and then mm-hmm. kind of learn from there and then build a system out to duplicate that in the future.
Yeah, guys, so let's really talk about that. So Harper said he was over rehabbing the property by $5,000 per unit. Now that's only a 6 unit, so that's $30,000. Imagine if that was a 6D unit, that'd be $300,000 that he over rehabbed the unit. Talk about mistakes really compounding with multifamily. You know, it's good he thought big, started small. So Harper, let's talk about what happened next. So you get the 6 unit, you get your first taste of multifamily. Where did you go from there?
Yeah, well, at that point, my brother quit his corporate job, came up and worked with us, and I have another partner, Peter, and we said, look, let's go a little bit bigger. So we thought we'd be in the range of maybe a 20 to 50 unit. So we find a 35 unit here in Knoxville, and on the details on that one, we bought it for $2 million, but the way we found that was actually broker relationships. And some people say, well, I'd like to go direct to the seller and not have the broker. I think broker's a great asset because they've already vetted, you know, the deal and the seller and have some of their numbers together. So what they did, this also goes back to mentorships and relationship building. One of my mentors, Scott, had gotten a, you know, one of the A-list emails, so to say, about the properties before they listed it. They had the memorandum and everything together, but they had sent an email to him. So he called me and forwarded it to us. We were the first people to actually go walk it, you know, try to walk it immediately, put a full price offer in, which was $1.95 million. And then they had another two or three full price offers and one over. So, you know, we were hungry and we knew the deal could be good and we still had due diligence. So what we did is we put down 50 grand earnest money and said at least half that would go hard after a shorter due diligence phase to show, hey, we're serious. Because since we were younger, we're 22, 24, 21, you know, trying to take this down, like we know we can do it. But other people have this stigma that people that young just don't know what they're doing. So we had to really go in there and say, hey, we're ready to go. We're ready to put the money down. So we ended up getting that one under contract. And that was a great deal. And it's been really good since.
Josh, this is what I love about this episode right now, because everyone on the call is going to say to themselves, I have a limiting belief. It's either A, I'm too young. And Harper could say that. He's too young, but he started. B, I'm too old. Well, I'm still doing it. And Josh says I'm old. So that's not a limiting belief, right, Josh? Right. And I think C is not having money, right? I mean, everyone says, well, I need money to get into real estate. The biggest thing that I hear from our students is I either have to save money for a down payment or I'm going to wait till the market corrects and then I'm going to get into it. So let me talk 1 minute about that. If you wait till the market corrects and you don't have a team in place or you're not educated, you're going to miss the boat, just like you've missed the boat for the last 5 years. So when I tell people, it's always the time to be in the market, because a deal is not going to fall in your lap unless you are educating yourself, unless you're building teams, unless you're like Harper out there making those broker relationships, walking the properties, putting in LOIs, becoming creative with those deals. I think that's really important. So too young, too old, lack of money, that didn't stop Harper. What do you think, Josh?
Yeah, I think Harper is the classic case of education times action equals results, and then just overcoming anything that comes his way, always reaching up. I mean, clearly there's those that have the results he wants and you can learn from them. Success leaves clues. You know, Harper, what I want to hear more about is this 35 unit. So you got it, you acquired it, you know, $1.95 million. How did you raise the money? What was the business plan? Give us a little bit about the property itself and where are we at now with it?
Yeah, sure. So once we got that contract, that's where you know, we said, okay, we got, you know, maybe 150 or 200k, and we were going to raise about 700,000, right? So reserve account, 25% down, some closing costs and a nice acquisition fee, since we, you know, had worked hard putting together, we wanted to get a little bit to, you know, take back home for the three managing partners. But for that deal right there, when we raised to $700,000, we maybe had four to five other investors come in with it. And that is what led us to be able to go take it down. One of the mistakes I think we had was we waited too long to raise the capital. We weren't always raising and keeping people in the loop as much as we should have before we got the contract. We started raising, you know, thereafter we got the contract. And I think that was a great learning experience for us, because that was made it a little bit tighter on that raise there. But yeah, if you want to run into some specific questions, I'm happy to talk anything about that.
That's a huge lesson right there, Harper. I think everyone is always saying to themselves, I need to find the deal, then I find the money. Everybody on this call, when you get off this podcast, the action step is, if you want to start raising money, you have to start creating substantive relationships today. And if you don't have a deal, find a case study. Get a case study of a similar deal that you're looking at, whether it's a 30 unit or 20 unit in your market. Put that case study together and start talking to other potential investors or partners and saying, these are the types of deals that I'm looking at. If the opportunity comes along, would you like to become part of this opportunity? That's really important, because when the syndication gets on and you sign those papers, man, it is go time. There's a lot of moving parts going on. And if you don't have those investors or that money flowing to the deal, like Harper, and it's happened to us also, you start scrambling, you start making mistakes, and you start getting nervous, and you could potentially blow up a great deal. So Harper, that's a great point, not having the capital and not having the people there. Go look for the money today. And as you're doing that, let's start sourcing deals.
Absolutely. So Harper, you close on a deal, you raise the capital. What's next?
Yeah. So once we closed on that deal there, well, here's another lesson that we for sure learned. We also had some banking relationships, but we relied too much on one single bank that we used for the first two deals. So what we did there is we just assumed that, hey, we gave you a first deal, gave you a second deal, you know, let you have favorable terms as a bank. Hey, we're going to give you this nice 35 unit bread and butter. And I think their basket was a little bit fuller, so to say. And since we were also younger, they were wanting our investors to also PG or personally guarantee the loan. And we said, you know, hell no, we don't want you personally guaranteeing that, because they're passive and we're active. We want to take the, you know, liability there. And they didn't want to work with us or maybe do pro rata. So I guess the lesson there is we needed to talk to, you know, three or five banks and try to keep them in the mix as long as we could. So what happened was we assumed one bank. They kind of verbally said they would do it, and there's a little bit of miscommunication. They would have done it, just not on the terms we wanted. So then we started looking for other banks, and this was, you know, a week or two in or whatever. So at that point, you know, that was another thing that added to the raising the capital, is like, we should have been doing this, you know, months ahead of time and just prep them for it. So when it comes, hey, everything's already ready to go. Try to keep more in the mix. So that's definitely something that we're doing differently on the following deals, you know, that come up. So
let me ask you a question. Do you think you outgrew that bank? Is that one of the things, reasons why? Because maybe if you start outgrowing the bank, almost like a property management company, you have a 6 unit and 8 unit, all of a sudden you outgrow it and go to a 40 unit, that property management company might not even be able to handle your deal. So it's always out there making those relationships, correct?
Yeah, that's right. And sometimes it's just about timing. You know, maybe they're lending too much and on apartments and they're like, hey, no, we're good for now. Or maybe it's the person, hey, we have too many loans with them. So you just always need to keep your options open and those relationships strong.
That's excellent. Thank you for that bit of advice. That was great advice.
Yeah, I think I like that. And I think there's a real lesson to distill from this. It's the proactive approach versus the reactive approach. If we would have been proactive on networking for investors, we would have had those relationships, rather than reactive and scrambling. Same thing with the banks, proactive vetting them and creating the relationships rather than reactive scrambling to make it happen. So I think if you take that approach, these obstacles don't become obstacles anymore, and you're able to overcome those challenges much easier. Harper, would you agree?
Oh, I'd fully agree. And that's where, I know I mentioned this a few times already, but you know, I'm really serious. It's like, if I truly had mentor education, kind of like what Jake and Gino's put together, it would have held my hand and had the right guidance to where these things would just not have happened, you know?
Absolutely. So, okay, what was the, so you close on the deal, you get the financing. Now, what was the opportunity on the deal? Why did you like this one so much? You know, how much were rents under market? You know, what was the deferred maintenance? You know, were they a mom and pop owner? Did they have systems? Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, sure. So we'll go into the numbers and background of it. So yeah, it's based in Knoxville, 35 unit North Knoxville. There's I believe 9 buildings. We got a single family house on site, which was where the mom and pop owner had stayed. They had built the complex themselves slowly over time on the 5 acres. It's made up of 4 and 5 plexes. So there's 34 apartment units. There's 1 single family resident. What we liked about the property is 18 out of 35 of the units were on common water. So then we could implement RUBS or, you know, build back a water fee to increase our bottom line. And then 2, the current owner, the management was fair and he upkept the property. But some of why the tenants really liked them is because the rents were, you know, $150, $200 under market on some of them. So, and a lot of them were month to month. So we saw that there were some vacancies we could take over, get those up higher, kind of test the markets here we could go with. But we also saw that there was a lot of room to grow with doing minimal rehabs on some of the units. And then also, like I said, the RUB. So what we did when we took over, rents were around $20,000, and there are some vacancies, especially the house, because they were living there. So I would say the gross potential income at their, you know, actuals all leased up was about $22,500 a month. And it's been about 6 months, and the rents now are $28,000 we're bringing in, or income, so to say, is $28,000. So on paper, we bought, you know, around $2 million, but on paper, you know, based on the numbers, it's probably worth $2.4 million now. So that was awesome to have that equity increase, but we forced their appreciation because it was a value add opportunity. So
that's awesome. Great job. I want to ask you one question before we go any short answers. You know, what is your best advice for anyone trying to get and buying their first multifamily deal?
You know, I'm going to have to bring it up again, is get really strong mentorship and have them hold your, you know, just hold their hand throughout the process. It's really something that's going to save you a lot of time. Like, yes, our group had got these deals done and yes, they're going well, but you know, there's so many things that we could have done better with mentorship if we actively listened to them and actively took what they were saying.
So what is the future for you? What's next for you?
So what's next is probably looking to buy 50 to 100 units, probably within the next, 6 to 12 months. When we're building that out, we also got to build out our internal systems so that we can scale it up. So I think right now there's some things that, we're doing too many mundane tasks and we can outsource with assistants and stuff, but now we got to build out that framework so we can scale up and keep adding units. So I would say that's what's next with us.
I love that. Josh, you want to give a recap?
Yeah. So what we learned here is, you know, age is a limiting belief. Even at the age of 19, Harper got into this. And not only did he start wholesaling, then rehabbing, but he also scaled up to multifamily. Success leaves clues, guys. Why go out there and reinvent the wheel? Someone's doing what you're doing. Follow that path rather than learning from the school of hard knocks. And it's always better to be proactive approaching any challenges rather than reactive and scrambling. Now, what I want to know is, Harper, how can the listeners get a hold of you?
Yeah, sure. A really good way to get a hold of me would be emailing me. And I guess you could leave it in the show notes, but it's going to be harper@arrowdoor.com. And that's ARROWDOOR.com. And you could also call me at 865-730-2621. I'd be happy to answer and talk with you.
Awesome. Harper, you know, I want to thank you for being an amazing guest on the show and sharing the, you know, your mover and shaker story. Guys, if you want to be the next mover and shaker's guest, email me, josh@jakeandgino.com. Now, if you did like this show, what we ask is please leave us a review. And until next time, let's make it a movers and shakers week. See you guys, and thank you very much.
Bye, everybody. Thanks, Harper.